Anyway, I made my choice, and I never doubted for a moment that it was the right choice. And towards the end of March 1967, I returned to England, as far as I know, for good. And I wasn't murdered. And I didn't find every door closed against me. I even found I had some friends left. They weren't very well known, they weren't very influential, but they were friends. And a few weeks after my return, in April 1967, I started the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. And the rest, if I may say so, is history. Now, I've gone into all this for a definite reason. In the first place, it gives some idea of how I came to start the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order and later the Western Buddhist Order. Also, it throws light on why I started the FWBO and what the general nature of the FWBO and the WBO actually is. Now, some of the people on whose toes I happened to tread were not Buddhists. And in some cases, they didn't even profess to be Buddhists. But they were members of Buddhist organizations. Now, how was this? This seems rather odd. Not Buddhists, but members of Buddhist organizations. How had they become members? Well, they'd become members in a very simple way, simply by paying the subscription. So, having paid the subscription, they became a member. Having become a member, they could be elected as an office bearer, and being an office bearer, they could determine policy, even though perhaps they knew little or nothing about Buddhism, or even had no real sympathy with it. And I'd seen the same sort of thing going on in India. I had quite a long association, off and on, with the Mahabodhi Society, and I'd seen that Mahabodhi Society virtually taken over by caste Hindus. That are to say, orthodox Hindus, people whose ideas were quite opposed to those of Buddhism. So the lesson was therefore clear. We needed a new kind of Buddhist organization. An organization that one could not join simply by paying a subscription. We needed an organization that one could join, if that is the right word, only by actually committing oneself to the ideals for which it stood. In other words, we needed an order. We needed a sangha. And I came to the same conclusion from other considerations too. I've mentioned that I had seen, in the course of my 2-year visit to England, that the Buddhist movement in this country left much to be desired. Now, if anything, this is an understatement. I could even go so far as to say that there was at that time no Buddhist movement in this country. There were Buddhist societies. There were people who were interested in Buddhism, but there was very little actual practice of Buddhism. For instance, most English Buddhists were not vegetarians, and hardly anybody in those days even thought of trying to practice a right livelihood. This just wasn't even considered. English Buddhists in those days lived the same kind of lives as everybody else, usually quite middle-class lives. They had the same kind of job, led the same kind of family life, the same kind of social life, same kind of politics. The only difference was they were interested in Buddhism. They read books about Buddhism. They attended lectures on Buddhism. And, of course, they talked about Buddhism. Otherwise, they were exactly like everybody else. Indeed, in those days, many of these English Buddhists prided themselves on being just like everybody else. Now, I personally had found all this rather frustrating. I'd felt that people were not taking Buddhism, not taking the Dharma seriously, were not taking me seriously. They came along to classes, yes, they came along to lectures. They listened to the lectures. And after the lectures, they came up to me and congratulated me. They said how much they'd enjoyed the lecture and what a good lecture it was, etc. But afterwards, they carried on exactly as before. They didn't change in any way. They didn't even want to change. So I saw that this state of affairs simply could not continue. That if one was going to have a Buddhist movement at all in this country, well, one needed a real Buddhist movement, a movement made up of people who would take Buddhism seriously, people who would be willing to change, both internally and externally. Once again, what was needed was an order. So on my return to England in 1967, I therefore decided to found an order, a Western Buddhist order. But first, as I've already related, I founded the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. And under its auspices, we held meditation classes, gave lectures, organized retreats in the country, and so on. And in this way, gradually gathered together a small number of people, just two or three dozen at that time, people who were prepared to take Buddhism seriously, people who wanted to change. Some of these people I'd known before during my two-year preliminary visit, others were new. So a year later, in April 1968, 12 of those people became the first members of the Western Buddhist Order. And the new Buddhist movement had now really come into existence. Some of these people, unfortunately, did not remain with us for long. They found it more difficult to change than they had expected. But others are still with us today. And there are at present 80 members of the Western Buddhist Order, of both sexes and of all ages from 19 to 64. Besides citizens of the UK and Northern Ireland, this figure includes people of New Zealand, Finnish, American, German, Dutch, and Malaysian nationality.